that has been another really huge game changer for me in this kind of journey to joy. Doing a daily gratitude practice is truly where I found my joy. That's where I had to start writing down things that I was grateful for every day. And even in the hardest seasons of my life, my gratitude practice is what kept my mind aligned with just being joyful in all circumstances. It kept me aligned with just the word of God also, in that no matter what, I could be grateful for everything. You know, like you said, there's a list of things that we can be grateful for. And even in the worst of circumstances, there is still something to be grateful for. And that practice, every day I have like my morning practice, and I write down 5 things that I am grateful for every single day. That right there, that's where I have found my joy. That has allowed me to keep my peace, to keep being faithful, to maintain just my faith also. That practice alone has transformed my life significantly.
Yeah, gratitude will do that for sure. That's mine. Welcome to the Phase 4 podcast, inspired by Vishen Lakhiani and Ajit Nawalkar, co-founders of EverCoach, a division of Vine Valley. In this podcast, we speak to coaches and creatives about where they were, where they are, and where they are going. This is the intersection of what we focus on expands, and your story is your superpower. My guest today is Leslie Martinez, and she is the owner of Your Joyful Order. It's a podcast, it's a company, and she self-describes herself as a joyful wife, a mom of 2 boys, a Jesus follower, and she's a coach who's living joyfully with no regrets, and she can help you do the same. And today we're going to talk about that. And Leslie, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, JP, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you. I kind of like unloaded everything there, but maybe tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you ended up.
Yes, I am a wife and mom. I'm actually married to my high school sweetheart. We have been together for 22 years now. I have a son who is he just came home from college after his first semester. So it's been a blessing to have him home. And I have I have a son that's 18, a son that's 15. We are huge football fans. I love watching football. That is where I kind of say like my classy turns sassy, so to say, because if you see me on the sidelines, I'm a little rough on the edges when it comes to football. But I also am a life coach. I love Jesus. I serve faithfully at my church. I've been involved in ministry for over 22 years also. But recently, as a life coach, God has really taken me on a journey to not just really kind of heal some parts of myself and aim for some goals, but to really reach out to women and other people, just really sharing the message of just healing and chasing joy. I was in a season in my life when God really kind of was working on me. I found myself complaining a lot, just completely lost my identity of who I was. And God just put it in my heart, like, to look for joy in even just the little things. You know, when I came home, my boys were little. I was complaining about, dishes having to be washed and meals to be served. And I didn't realize how blessed I was and how joyful I should be that I had food to, you know, feed my kids and dishes to wash and stuff. So I went through a season of change and transformation where I had to really chase joy and make it a priority in my life. And I've made it kind of my mission in life, so to say, to teach others that and just to really seek out joy.
That's awesome. I love that. So are we talking Friday Night Lights when you're talking football?
You're talking Friday Night Lights and Sunday and Monday and Thursday. Like when it's football season, you will find me. My son was a football player, so we are avidly at Friday Night Lights for his school. And then whenever our team's playing, you know, Thursday, Sunday, I just, you know, have the game on Monday night. So we're always on the couch watching football.
I got you. Yeah, I was wondering. Cool. And then, So you went through a bit of a finding yourself, a transformation. I think this is part of it, right? Like the prodigal son leaves, and it's more like a metaphor. Like you got to leave your crib where you grew up and your house and go explore the world, find yourself along the way, and then you can come back and share with others, which is sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yes, yes. You know, for me, JP, the story actually is a little bit different. I was actually serving as a children's director in a church for about 9 years. So I was full-time ministry staff, and that's actually where I lost my identity. I got so caught up in the doing and the task of my job and my role and becoming a people pleaser and, you know, working 50 hours a week, 6 days a week, or 50 hours a week. Yeah, 6 days a week, just going, 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 and not spending time with God. You know, I found my identity in the role that I had and pleasing the people that were there. And that's where God just really like put me, you know, halted me in continuing because I was doing his work, but I wasn't spending time with him. So my identity was just in the title that I held. And my identity wasn't in really who I was in God. So that's where I started complaining because I was just unhappy. I was constantly going, 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 and just became almost like a perfectionist and a people pleaser, which is not who God had created me to be. So that's when God just really had to stop me and kind of realign who I was and what my mission was. And I literally went in one day to my leading pastor and basically quit my job on the spot and said, I can't continue doing this. Like, I can't be who I need to be in this role. And God opened the doors in so many different ways in that. But that, I mean, believe it or not, working in ministry is where I lost my identity.
That's different. I didn't expect that at all.
Yeah.
And so it sounds almost a little bit like burnout, but it also reminds me of a book I read called Boundaries by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. And there's a lot of religious overtones in the book. So if you're not religious, I want you to still check it out anyway, knowing that there's a lot of religion in the book, but try to see past that because the book is brilliant for setting boundaries. Have you ever heard of that book?
I've read it. It is on my shelf. Yes. Actually, when I worked on staff at our church, that was a book that we were required to read as a staff. And it is a phenomenal book. Dr. Cloud, Henry Cloud and Townsend are phenomenal authors. I've read several of their books. And yes, there's so many takeaways outside of it, like being, you know, kind of written with a faith foundation in it. So many takeaways.
Right. And I always drop that book and it's always like, you have to almost put the disclaimer because some people are like, they're not going to read it if they know that part. But knowing that, it's like, okay, like it's really good information as well, right? It's both.
Yeah.
But
yes, the meat of it is definitely worth the read for sure. There's been lots of lessons that I learned there. And like you had said, like it sounds like burnout. That was a huge part of it. It definitely was burnout. And I needed to learn how to create boundaries. Yeah. And that was another thing. I really needed to set boundaries and, you know, saying no and not in my expectations of things also. Like I say, I'm a recovering perfectionist. I had a huge kind of aha moment actually while I was kind of going through this transition where a mentor of mine, I had just completed like a really big project and he was looking at the project and I knew all the flaws that were within that project. And he was looking through it and he was like, Leslie, this is phenomenal. This is, you know, excellent. And I was like, well, thank you. But, you know, but this is wrong. This is like, I started pointing out all the flaws in it and he just like shut me up really quick. And he was like, oh, no, hold on, stop. He's like, I said it was excellent. I didn't say it was perfect. And that was like a huge kind of aha learning moment for me where I started to just pivot my outlook on the expectation of making things perfect. I realized nothing ever will be perfect. And my strive for perfection is what was causing me burnout, causing me to lose my identity because I was putting my success and, you know, everything in the perfection of what I put out there. So that was part of a lesson that I learned also in, and learning to find joy in failure, believe it or not, you know, finding joy in the failure of things and lack of, and just really learning to be content.
Love it. I love this. Definitely the failure thing. It keeps popping up. And then I'm like, even more, it's like when you're trying to rip a muscle, like some of the exercises, it's like, just go until you fail. Like that's the wording that they use, like push your reps beyond failure. And then you fail, but then your muscle gets bigger. So it's part of it. Failure for me is like, it's just part of it. I wanted two things. So when you were saying about saying no, it's also about saying yes to yourself. And then another thing, you kind of went there. My next question was going to be, how do you find joy in the sadness? So you can take them separate or wrap them together, however you want. But
yeah, well, finding joy in the sadness, finding joy in failure, like I had said, joy is really that emotion that just like lays deep in your gut, kind of. And joy is not based on circumstance. It's not based on environment. It's not based on things. Joy is just in there. You know, joy, if I can reference in the Bible, joy is actually one of the fruits of the spirits. You know, you have love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, faithfulness. So it is just something that is always in you that nothing can take it away. And there's a difference between joy and happiness. Happiness is kind of based on like your environment or something that is going on. You know, I can say, I love going to Disneyland. It makes me happy. I also find joy there because it's not always the happiest place on earth when you are having to wait 2 hours in line, you know, and there's like 50,000 people walking down Main Street. You know, so I can sit on Main Street and try to like, you know, wait 2 hours to see a parade and watch 50,000 people stroll down Main Street. But like, I can still find joy there. The place makes me happy, but my joy is still even that, yes, this is a happy place, but all these people, I struggle with anxiety. So crowds can sometimes cause me major anxiety, but that's where I have to dig deep to that joy to like calm me down and bring me peace, you know? So just recently too, I dealt with the death of a very close family member. A cousin of mine passed away and he was like my brother. He actually walked me down the aisle when I got married, and there was joy in celebrating his life. You know, it was an unexpected death, and it definitely was, you know, very, very sad. But then there was so much joy in there also. And that's just because of the joy that he left in my heart, the joy that he left in my family's heart, the legacy that I know that is going to continue and the stories that we share about him and stuff. So you definitely can have joy and sadness at the same time, but that joy just is in you all the time. And it's not something that can be taken away.
When you're talking there about your cousin, I'm the same. My dad, like a week ago, was 10 years since I buried my father, and the day, it was every year, right? When it's those anniversaries, it comes up more, but that was one of those where it was like really sad, but really happy too, right?
Mm-hmm. And then
Victor Frankl talks about it from, he was in concentration camps. And when you're saying about circumstance, environment, and things making you like taking away your joy, or you can still find joy within. His quote is, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And I think that's what you're saying.
Oh, that's so good. You're going to have to send me that quote, JP. That was so good. Yes. And, you know, I think of people like, I don't know if you're familiar with who Corrie ten Boom is. She wrote, she was imprisoned in a concentration camp, and she found joy through there. There's a book that she wrote, this is an old book, an old, you know, kind of faith-based book, I should say. And she shares a lot about her stories in the concentration camps and how they would just sing worship songs in the cells there. Even in the midst of, you know, being stuck in a concentration camp, they were still worshiping God and praising and finding joy in that, you know, and so many other stories like that. I mean, even go to the Bible, like Peter in prison, you know, he was preaching to the prison guards and, you know, finding joy in there. And finding joy has been something that like has literally transformed my life. It has brought so much peace to my life. It has brought peace amongst my home because of the person that my husband and I have become through this process of finding joy and just so many different, you know, things that we have brought. It has completely changed my home environment from like what I grew up in. You know, I grew up in an abusive environment and I didn't have to pass that on to my kids. You know, that generational cycle ended with me where my kids can come home and be at peace and do fun things and, you know, find joy in just the little things. You know, my son being home from college right now after his first semester, he's home and he's like appreciating home so much.
Laundry.
So much better now. The home cooked meals, you know, his own room, like all these things. He's just like, oh man, this is good. You know? And I'm like, see, it's the little things that we look at that we take advantage of. And then we don't realize it until, you know, it's gone. Like even that of a loved one, you know, this is our first holiday season without my cousin. And it's definitely going to be a lot different. He was also my son's godfather. Very close. He was a huge football fan too. So football season has definitely been, he had a different like team that he cheered for than we did. So we always talk trash amongst each other with each other's teams. And there's so many times that I want to pick up the phone and text him to talk trash about like football or his team, you know, and I'm just like, ah. And rather than like I'll have tears of joy come down because I just think like, ah, he's getting to watch these football games from up above. Like, and I just have to throw in here, JP, I don't know what if you're Crowder football listeners or not. I mean, football watchers or whatnot, but we're at the tail end of football season, and my cousin was a huge Cowboys fan, and this is the first season that they are doing so good. So I just laugh and I'm like, it took for you to get in heaven for your team to actually do good.
But it's
the little things like that that like I find joy now watching the Cowboys when I never did, because just thinking of how big of a fan like my cousin was. And I can go on and on.
I'm with you 100%. You said a couple times, finding happiness, chasing happiness, like it's an external thing that you had to go and look for. And so is that true?
You know, yes and no. I constantly say chase joy because I feel that it is something that it's kind of like an ongoing journey, you know, like your journey to joy, because you can't be content at all with where you're at, even. And that goes with all of the like what I was saying are the fruits of the spirit, you know, love, joy, peace. Like you have to constantly be looking for peace, and peace can look different in very different seasons in your life, in different environments, in different circumstances also. What does it look like? And that goes for joy also. What does joy look like in grief? What does joy look like with, you know, on Christmas morning? What does joy look like when you're fighting traffic? What does joy look like when you're having to wash dishes or cook meals or do the dish? You know, so many different circumstances and where we have to find. And sometimes I have to dig deep for that. You know, if I'm stuck in traffic, and I live in LA area, JP, like we have some of the worst traffic ever. To go 20 miles, like you're talking like an hour and 15 minutes, like a given. Okay. So
LA's number one and Toronto's like number two.
So then you are familiar with some pretty heavy traffic, and it's easy for one person to lose their salvation or turn to road rage, you know, when you're stuck and you're trying to get somewhere and you just keep seeing that red on your map and your ETA keeps like bumping up, you know. So there's different circumstances where it's like, okay, I got to dig deep for that patience right here. So I think every circumstances, you have to find it and dig for it and really approach things as it comes, so to say.
Yeah, for sure. And then, have you ever heard of a book, The Book of Joy? It's a conversation with the Dalai Lama and, oh man, Bishop Desmond Tutu. And it's narrated by this guy, Douglas Abrams, but it's such an amazing book. It's called The Book of Joy. And it just...
I've never heard of that, JP. I'm writing that down, The Book of Joy. Okay. And it's... Yeah. Who's the exact author of it?
I think his name's Douglas Abrams or Abraham.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, The Book of Joy. And it's just this conversation. And they talk about how no matter what the circumstance, you can find nuggets of gold somewhere, right? And so it's up to us to go and find it. And like gratitude is one way. Even no matter how bad your life is, you can be grateful that, especially in this day and age, right? We're having this conversation like this. We couldn't do this 10 years ago, or we could, but nobody was really doing it. And then yeah. Like having a bed, having a blanket, having a roof, having water, like all these things that are, we just take for granted. Having blood flow through our body and we don't have to worry about it, right? Like our yes. hearts beating and all these things that we just don't even notice. And like, or last night I'm looking at the sky, really crisp, cold, clear night, no clouds. And the stars were just unbelievable. They're all dancing and talking and just, oh man. So these are little tiny ways and it's up to us. No one's going to really do it for you. If anything outside of you, I believe it's like fleeting, right? And so, yeah, you have the goal. I want to run a marathon, but that's fleeting. Once it's done, it's done. Where's the joy going to come from? So it's up to us, I believe, to cultivate ourselves.
For sure. And, you know, JP, let me add on that, if you don't mind me kind of adding the fact that you mentioned about gratitude. That has been another really huge game changer for me in this kind of journey to joy. Doing a daily gratitude practice is truly where I found my joy. That's where I had to start writing down things that I was grateful for every day. And even in the hardest seasons of my life, my gratitude practice is what kept my mind aligned with just being joyful in all circumstances. It kept me aligned with just the word of God also, in that no matter what, I could be grateful for everything. You know, like you said, there's a list of things that we can be grateful for. And even in the worst of circumstances, there is still something to be grateful for. And that practice, every day I have like my morning practice, and I write down 5 things that I am grateful for every single day. That right there, that's where I have found my joy. That has allowed me to keep my peace, to keep being faithful, to maintain just the, you know, my faith also. That practice alone has transformed my life significantly.
Yeah, gratitude will do that for sure. That's my number one thing for people. So I do a bunch of different coaching, but one thing I do is I facilitate mental health groups for people with anxiety, depression, chronic pain. And that's the number one go-to is like just gratitude. Even like you think you're in the worst situation right now, but listen to Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning talking about that's the worst nightmare humans could possibly have right now in Gaza. Like that's horrible, right? And there's people there still finding gratitude. So gratitude is the number one thing for me to begin everything else. It's like a domino, right?
Yes.
You're talking about gratitude and you're talking about kind of journaling and bringing it together, and you give me a beautiful segue. Do you have you talk about your planner?
Yes. With that, I do. That has been a practice that I, like I said, I've been doing for several years. And I would basically just get like a blank notebook and I would write 5 things that I'm grateful for, 10 goals that I'm aiming to achieve, and then a prayer for the day. That's been my practice for like the past 7 years. And it has been a practice that has completely transformed my life. It's transformed just who I am inside and out. And I created a journal basically with those writing prompts where people can do the same thing each and every day. It's a journal available on Amazon right now. And I will say this, creating this journal has not been the funnest of my journeys that like God has taken me on. I experienced actually a lot of failure in it, JP, if I'm completely being honest. This journal was rejected several times. I had a lot when I finally like released it, there was like a major delays. And
KDP, you mean KDP rejected it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. KDP rejected it several times. And then there was like just major delays. Once I released it, all of a sudden, like it went from a 3 to 4 day turnaround to like a 4 to 5 week turnaround for people to get it. So there's been lots of hiccups with it, but I'm like persevering and saying, you know what? I know that this tool is going to literally change people's lives. And I'm going to keep pushing it out there in hopes that, you know, people are able to get it and really see the transformation through them. It is a practice that you, in order to see the results, you have to do it every day. And I think that just goes with gratitude, you know? And I hope that your listeners would, you know, kind of take to heart like the transformation that really undergoes when you just do daily gratitude. I think, you know, and you don't need a fancy journal. Like you don't need my fancy journal to do it. You can just get a blank piece of paper and write your daily gratitude or even just text it, write it in your phone, whatever. But that practice, I've seen it change my life. I've seen it change my husband's life. I know so many people that have done it that it, I mean, they can speak so much about it as well. And I really feel that people who struggle with anxiety, who struggle with stress, who struggle with depression, me too, as a coach, this is like one of the first practices that I tell people to do. Like, and it's so simple, and people don't think that something so simple will help them overcome anxiety, will help them overcome depression. But it's like, no, yes. Like, do you understand? And I'm kind of like a brain nerd too, JP. Like, I love to read stuff about neuroscience and connect, you know, kind of science, therapy, faith, all of that together. And the same component of your brain that anxiety is triggered by, the same component can be triggered by gratitude. Like, so if you are, you know, write your gratitude down every day, you're almost like suppressing that anxiety, like that hormone that is that stress cortisol that is created when you are like stressed out or have anxiety. And I will tell you, since I have been doing this practice, I can count on one hand in the last 7 years how many anxiety attacks that I have had. Before this practice, when I used to like really struggle with anxiety, I have very frequent anxiety attacks, like maybe once a week, every other week kind of thing. And now, like in the past 7 years, I can count maybe on one hand how many I have had.
Yeah, it's so true. The miracle of gratitude, Dr. Robert Holden says, is that the simple idea of gratitude, I'm paraphrasing him, but the simple idea of gratitude shifts your entire perception of the world. And it's so true. And I think kind of to wrap up on gratitude, and then even you had neuroscience, and Martin Seligman, he found out positive psychology, right? And so, sorry for the people who I've already said this to, but I'm talking to Leslie now. So for the first like 100 years of psychology in America, like William James, 1890s, until pretty much 1999, the idea of psychology was people are sick. How can we just make them like band-aid them and give them pills and whatever? Nobody ever asked the question, what if somebody's already doing okay? And then they're just a normal person who has ups and downs in their life. How can we make them thrive and flourish? So this guy, Martin Seligman, founded positive psychology. He was the president of the American Psychiatric Association. So he's like the godfather, right? And his number one exercise is called, like for changing your life, is called the three things exercise. He says, when you're going to bed at nighttime, just think of three things you're grateful for. Even if you don't believe it, just do it anyway and come back after 2 months and let me know. And it does, because especially like you're doing with writing it down, it's like now your brain's seeing it. Okay, I'm grateful. And there's more evidence there. And I don't know. Gratitude's good. So.
Well, you know, let me add this really quick too. I always encourage people to write it down, like hand write it down in a journal. I'm a former teacher also. I still teach a little bit here and there in the classroom. I sub frequently, but I used to teach preschool. I used to teach kindergarten. And the foundations, there is like a hand and brain connection that's how children learn letters. And that's how they memorize things, is by writing things out. So when you are writing your gratitude out, there is a certain hand brain connection that is made that allows your brain to, I mean, literally be triggered by what it is that you're writing down. It's easy for us to type things in a phone, you know, and you have like our phone can finish our sentences for us. So you're not actually physically writing it. So when you're using a digital computer, iPad, phone, whatever, to write it out, you're not making that same brain hand connection than you would if you were writing it out. And that's why I have the journal where you can write out your goals also, because your goals are like getting ingrained in your brain almost. And it's something that when it's ingrained in your brain, you're going to strive for it even more.
Yeah, no doubt. Goals are so important, right? I'm just thinking, I set some really audacious, ridiculous goals for next year for running, and they're ridiculous, but they're going to drive my behavior. And then who knows what will happen, but my, like between now and then, the things that I'm going to have to do to try to make that goal, it's like, wow.
Yeah. I haven't fully set on my goals yet for the new year. My husband and I are actually planning to go spend a couple of days away and just spend 2 days just planning for the next year. But I have some crazy, insane ideas for next year that I haven't even like, I'll share with him when we go away, but I haven't even like spoke to him about it. And some of them I'm like, oh, dang. Like, I'm a little scared.
That's good.
And it is like, and even like this past year, I had a goal of hiking 250 miles. I fell short. I think I'm at like 202 miles right now. But, you know, I just think like, if I didn't have the goal of 250, I probably would have even never gotten to 200. So yeah. I'm okay falling short. Like, yeah, I didn't reach the goal, but I did 200 miles this last year. Like that's crazy to think, you know, like with you with running, like you probably have some crazy goal, you know, but even if you don't get it, if you're even get that much closer, like it's still good. Still good.
Oh, exactly. So as we begin to wind down, if this episode resonates with you, please like, subscribe, share, follow, leave a review, but no hard sell. And if you're into this conversation, reach out to Leslie. We're going to put our website in the show notes, but there's lots of amazing things. You can contact, there's a shop, you can pick up that journal and let us know what you think. And I think I always ask everyone this question. This is the Phase 4 podcast, and Phase 4 in the 6-phase meditation by Vishen Lakhiani is all about creating a future 3 years out. So where is Leslie 3 years from today?
I am hoping that I'm actually speaking at schools. I have a big heart to speak to students a lot about mindset, just a lot about goal setting, mindset, and really allowing like high school kids to put into practice a lot of these things that I learned, I think, a lot later in life. I wish that when I was in high school, I learned to create boundaries, that I learned about chasing joy, that I learned how to properly set goals. And this is something that as a teacher, I want kids to have. And that's kind of been my goal, is that I can become a speaker to go around to all the schools and create some nonprofit organization that is not only faith-based, but educational-based, in working and connecting with school districts around California area, Southern California, where we can create some kind of program to get this type of teaching into the classrooms.
Yeah, that's awesome. You want to connect with Ed Milet. He's close to you anyway, man. He'd be right into that.
JP, Ed Milet is like, I call him like my spiritual father. Wow. I love Ed Milet. I love him. Yes. That would be a dream. Hey, you might be proclaiming something for me, JP. I'm gonna call that out in 3 years. I'll have met and maybe be speaking with Ed Milet.
That sounds awesome. I think maybe we can shift over to your podcast now. What does it look like? What's the format or style? And how is that?
So I have a podcast. It's called Your Joyful Order, and it really is all about bringing joy and order to your everyday life. I am all about spreading joy, but I also have found too that there is the joy must be found in order, and order means like, you know, you got to be disciplined. You have to have things in order for you to seek joy. I have realized that chaos does not bring joy in my life, and chaos tends to not bring joy in many people's lives. So I like to share a lot of things that bring joy. I share testimonies, you know, fun, encouraging stuff, personal stories that I have gone through. I bring on lots of different guests. I've had doctors, I've had other coaches, I had like a travel advisor, so many different people. Yesterday, I just interviewed a friend. She'll be on later next month, and she was sharing her testimony actually with undergoing a double mastectomy for preventative measures. And you know, so many different stories that I share and insights. And I just shared with you before we started recording, I'm 64 episodes in, going on 2 years now. And I am going, and I would, you know, anyone who is looking to bring joy and order into their life, my show is for you.
That's so awesome. So I guess, you know, by now I'm a guy for quotes, but when you're talking about discipline and that's how you find joy, it sounds ironic, paradoxical, but it's true. And so the greatest marathon runner ever, Eliud Kipchoge, says, only the disciplined ones are free in life.
Yes. Yes. I've read that quote before. And JP, I used to think discipline was like a bad word. And I grew up in a home where discipline was so,
it means the belt's coming.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the belt, the fist, a brick, like name it all, like literally. So for me, discipline looked very different. So growing up, like when I finally did get my freedom, so to say, I'm like, discipline, what are you talking about? My husband is such a well-oiled, self-disciplined man. Like he is so consistent and discipline, and because of that, he's able to do so much more beyond his capacity. It is insane. The amount of stuff that he is able to use to do and his creativity is so immense. So I've learned a lot from that. And even like my son, you know, my son that plays football, like football player, athletes have to be so well disciplined. I was an athlete in high school, and I think that discipline actually did help me to be a good, student academically. But then once I got out of that like structured, you know, school environment, I started to kind of lack some of that discipline because I just wanted my freedom. But little did I know how much freedom really comes from discipline and consistency.
I love it. Yeah. Very stoic almost.
Yeah.
So a couple more. What maybe are some non-negotiables that you have for continuing to cultivate the joy that you have? Things that you just have to do every day, or things that maybe not every day, but like once a week, I'm going in the sauna and hot tub because it's good for my health, which is good for my brain, which is good for my joy.
Non-negotiables for sure. Every day I wake up and I do my morning routine. That consists of my gratitude journal, my goals. It consists of a devotion and reading. I try to read at least like 10 pages a day. And that also consists of like Bible. I read the Bible right now. We're in the end of the year, I'm reading like the whole book of Luke for the month of December that we're in right now. So those are like non-negotiables. Getting out for a walk every day also, at least a 20-minute walk every day. That is a non-negotiable. I have two dogs. I have two little beagles. So I have to get them out for a walk every day. Otherwise, like they're stir crazy in here. And every week, my husband and I try to make it a point to go out and hike, like 4 or 5 mile hikes. In the colder months, it gets a little more challenging to do it. And I, I'm complaining about Southern California colds. I know you're laughing at me, Jamie. But for us, like getting up and when it's like maybe 48, 49, 50 degrees in the early mornings, I'm like, oh, my bed feels very cozy. So I will say we haven't been getting out as much, and we've just had like a lot to do. But that is, I have found that when we are out in nature, that's when I actually hear most from God. That is when I have like my creative moments and ideas. And, you know, we'll be on a walk and my husband and I just be, you know, sharing, running stuff past each other, sharing how our week's gone, having conversation. And then there's other times where we're just walking in silence the whole time because our brain is just, you know, on its own kind of journey during that time. So those are for sure some non-negotiables, and exercising too. I do my best to get some yoga and strength training and stuff in. But that's where it's at. And drinking water. I'll say that. I don't drink coffee. I don't drink soda. I literally don't drink almost anything else other than water and maybe juice or something from here and there. But water is my choice drink. And tea. Yeah.
Not a bad idea, right? Don't drink your calories. Yeah. It's probably going to benefit you. And so I guess kind of final thoughts, wrapping up. Anything I didn't touch on? Anything you want to talk about? Anything.
I'm just grateful, JP, for you having me on. For the listeners, I just was dealing with a serious sickness where I had a really bad cough, and JP was so kind to reschedule me, because I think if I was on a couple weeks ago, I would not have been such a pleasant guest. But I am so utterly grateful right now during this time as we're ending the year of connections and meeting new people and really just networking. And I hope that your listeners, you know, get some takeaways here. And I would love to connect with, you know, new people this year. That's a big goal of mine, is to really put myself out there and make connections with new people.
That's amazing. I was talking to someone the other day. Her goal was to make 200, to meet 200 new people in this kind of a format. I was like, wow, that's pretty good.
That's a big goal to make there. 200. Wow.
Right. But there's again, right? Even if she doesn't get there, she'll probably get to 100, which she's not exactly good to at all. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
So my final question is, how can people reach you?
Yeah, I'm big on Instagram. That's kind of my platform of choice. My Instagram handle is @yourjoyfulorderstyle. And you can also find me, my website is Your Joyful Order. My website is undergoing some changes. So it might be down for a couple of weeks or so, but I'm hoping to get back up. And then my podcast, Your Joyful Order podcast, it is on pretty much all platforms where you can listen to podcasts.
Amazing. Leslie, I'm so grateful for your time today and joyful for your time. And thank you so much. That was awesome.
Thank you so much, JP. It was a pleasure.